And with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, June 15th. Happy Father's Day to those of you who celebrate. We come to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, over-the-air affiliates, iHeart, TuneIn, everywhere else you get a signal in this fine world. We thank you for joining me on this day. Special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day. I'm going to be with you for the next hour once again, filling in for Andrew Zarian, I should say, talking about some of the news of the last day or so, some of the big headlines and bigger topics from last week that have caught my attention. Of course, again, it's Father's Day. And again, happy Father's Day to all you out there. I am a dad myself. I'm a son of a dad, a boy dad. I guess I don't know what I'm even trying to say. Anyway, what I'm trying to get to is that Father's Day is a special day, and wrestling is a great bond that a lot of fathers and sons and fathers and daughters share. And I have my own stories, which I'm going to tell in the next segment. However, I want to keep it just myself. I want to open this up. So I went to Twitter last night, and Wrestling Observer's Twitter account, X account, reshared it. And we got some thoughts from you, and I simply asked, tell me about your connections to Father's Day and wrestling, good or bad. And we got some great responses. I'm going to read a lot of those here today, including one from Brian Alvarez, co-founder of this very website. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about a little wrestling and politics, not in an offensive way, if you're rolling your eyes, not in an offensive way. We'll figure these things out. How CM Punk's right in the middle. We'll talk about some of the interesting free agent things that have happened this week. And a lot of other things that caught my news. Of course, we had another 4 hours of AEW this past week. For better or for worse, we have more 2.5 hours coming this week. We're going to talk about all that and more on today's special Father's Day edition of Wrestling Observer Live. Come on back. We'll talk some more. Back with you, Wrestling Observer Live, Sunday, June 15th. Again, happy Father's Day to those of you who are celebrating on this great day. We finally have nice weather here in the Northeast for once, at least for a few hours. We've had 13 straight Saturdays with rain. Can you believe that? It's a record. And I think we may be getting in next week. And so we'll take our Sundays as we can. So again, big day, Father's Day. And we'll talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about a lot of stories from you. And we're going to talk about some news of the week. And so a no collision last night. Of course, we had New Japan Dominion. We'll hit on that maybe a little bit in some short time. Some of the headlines, things like that. A nice, quiet wrestling weekend for the most part. And we'll take it after last weekend's craziness and after what's to come on July 12th. But let's talk a little bit about Father's Day. And I've wanted to write a column about this for a long time because I think it's a relatable story, but never have got to it. I opened up a Google Doc the other day that I started last year. And I thought, oh, okay, I must have written down a bunch of stuff and kind of just do some finishing touches. Nope, the thing was completely blank. I labeled it Father's Day, but it actually never got written. So the story I want to tell was about my dad in relation to pro wrestling. So I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 1978. Grew up in the 80s, and somewhere along the way, the pro wrestling bug bit me. I think it was watching WWE Superstars, WF at the time, Superstars of Wrestling, on a Channel 51, a UHF station out of Portland, Maine. And we had to get it with rabbit ears, and hopefully things were, I think the weather was okay. You had somebody get the tinfoil out to help the signal, things that my daughter will never understand. And that was my gateway. And I started getting videotapes and all these things. My dad, while supportive, was never a fan of wrestling at all. Like, he knew of wrestling. He would tell me stories about hearing about Argentina Roca. And I think I never fact checked him on that. I assume that was the correct name. But he used to tell me just stories of that, not really going to matches or anything like that. But he was familiar with it, and, you know, different friends and things like that. But he was never really interested in it in his own right. But he was very supportive of my growing addiction. And he would take me to shows. And especially my parents got divorced. We did a few more of those things together. And it's kind of father-son outings. We'd go to Portland, Maine, the then Cumberland County Civic Center. And we went to, went to a couple of house shows, I think, nothing that big. And of course, he was there with me the whole time. It was in case of him dropping me off, but he was there. And of course, just, the non-wrestling fan having to sit and kind of watch these things. It's I just think back that now and laugh, but obviously, very supportive, never complained, all that. He also took me to the very first time Hulk Hogan wrestled in Portland, Maine. And I wish I could remember the year. I could probably look at a cage match, maybe a different time I will. But he was on this tour, and I believe it was versus a one-man gang. And I think it was 1989, maybe 88. It was a big deal. And he got tickets and we went. And the one problem was we were in the stands, but down like the first couple rows. And everyone was standing up when Hogan came out. And so I got to see him physically a little bit. The match was probably 5 minutes. I mean, it was not maybe 8 minutes. It was not that long. And I didn't see much of the action because everyone was standing. I could not see a thing. I did see One Man Gang's feet go up for the body slam and everyone going crazy. I did get to see some posing after. So I was there the first time Hulkamania hit Portland, Maine. And I remember that. And I was trying to not show my disappointment and not being able to actually see Hulk Hogan physically. But that was quite a thing. I always remember that. We went to a closed circuit tape, the closed circuit for WrestleMania 4. And at the Portland Expo, and closed circuit, of course, this is for really the time of pay-per-view. Pay-per-view existed, but it's just kind of the way to get people out and about. Big screen, everyone's watching, and he took me to that as well, and he had to sit through that whole thing. And, Hogan losing early, I was super disappointed at that, but it was he was very supportive. Took me to an indie show with Tony Atlas on it. I still have a picture of that somewhere. And then when I started getting into writing about UFC, we would talk about he was not in the UFC at all. He liked boxing a little bit, but he always talked about the wrestling. Like he thought it was like an offshoot of WWE. Could not get into it. He was supportive of my writing and all that, but just could not understand it. And so, yeah, that was so. He passed away in 2012, and it was he was very supportive and was not. He clearly did not like it, and he gave me some crap from time to time. But he was supportive, and I think that's the most important lesson I can take away from that. I will say that one of the many notes I'm going to read today, this comes from TC of WrestleVotes, who is also apparently a New England fella, tweeted that when I was a tiny child, my dad took me to this show specifically to see Hulk Hogan. However, when Hogan's music hit the place, erupted, my popcorn spilled on the ground. So I began to cry, and I missed his entrance and probably most of the match. That match was, if I can pull this up here, it was at the Boston Garden in 1991. Let's see, it was Hogan and Tugboat against Earthquake and Dino Bravo. How about that? So yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good story. What else? We have from Nico JS. My dad got me into wrestling. Every Saturday and Sunday, it was wrestling in our house. But it was the NWA Jim Crockett Promotions era. Because it was that, when I was little, he and my mom used to go to the matches here, and the NWA came two times a year. The older guy was still hooked and still a wrestling fan to this day. And we also have a longtime website subscriber, friend of the website, JB, James Brown. Not the James Brown, but the James Brown in a different way. Says, Dad took me to see No Holds Barred in 1989 when I was 5 years old. I think my dad may have taken me to see that as well. And I don't know if he stuck around for the movie or not. I assume he must have. But yeah, that's pretty good. Producer Rob chiming in saying his dad hated it and would always tell me how ridiculous he thought it was whenever I would talk about it. So producer Rob, a longtime employee of this website and so on, friend of the website. Ari Burson checks in. The WWF came to my dad's high school in the early 80s, where he saw Andre the Giant live hitting a double noggin knocker. He told me about that when I discovered wrestling in the mid-2000s, and I thought it was amazing, and I still do now. Let's see. Mui BN, True Blue Story, 83, on Twitter. My pops is not much into wrestling. He would take me to the tape store. Yes, I'm that many years old. Yes, me as well. I remember once he rented SummerSlam 1990 and made up a huge bowl of Velveeta and chips just for me. Life could have ended there, and I'd been straight. Mr. JL, not the Mr. JL, I assume, not Jerry Lynn, January 23rd, 1984. I was five, and my father walked in the bedroom and asked me if I wanted to watch the Incredible Hulk wrestle, and Hogan defeated Sheik for the WWF title. And we'll also see around the bend. Let's see. Brian Alvarez, the co-founder of this very website that turned 20 years old this past week. How about that? Also, Brian turned 50. How about that? The entire reason this site exists, he says, is because of my dad's mom wanting to watch Lucha. So how about that? If his dad's mother, Carlos Alvarez, did not want to watch his dad's mom, Brian's grandmother, did not want to watch Lucha, this website would not exist. How about that? David Brill checks in. My dad wasn't a wrestling fan, but he knew how much I loved it. So he took me to a bar event thing that played WrestleMania 8. We watched together. I know I embarrassed the hell out of him when the Ultimate Warrior returned. One of my favorite memories ever. That's pretty good. So if there's, we'll read some other ones as the show goes along. But yeah, do you have some thoughts? Where does wrestling fit into your purview? Also, I should have asked this on Mother's Day as well. You know, sure, there's some again, Brian's grandmother. There are lots of ladies that maybe got their kids into pro wrestling. But it's certainly a unique bond. And again, for those that do not like it, and my daughter has never once seen a pro wrestling match, I have kept her away from the pro graps. The only thing she has seen is it was during All In from Wembley Stadium, and I was watching it on my laptop doing some writing for the website, and she saw a very bloody Orange Cassidy. She came home with my wife, and she ran right over, and she immediately looked at my laptop. She said, "Ugh, what's that?" So she saw Orange Cassidy bloody. That's the only wrestling match she's ever seen. She saw about 2 seconds, and that was it. And that is okay with me. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the week that was in pro wrestling, a few more Father's Day memories, and a lot more. So stick around. Wrestling Observer Live for Father's Day. Coming right back after this. Back with you, Wrestling Observer Live for Sunday, June 15th. Again, happy Father's Day. We'll tell a few more stories. If you came to the inbox, read those in just a minute. Let's get some of the news of the weekend. And if you heard, and I'm gonna preface this with saying this. I'm not a political person. I know. I'm not. It's it's hard to care. It is hard to get invested when there's so much vitriol. I mean, between wrestling and politics, it is very hard to be on social media at any point during the day. It is just very difficult. Everyone's taking sides and all those things. So politics, my friends, it is right here in pro wrestling. We avoid it for quite some time, for the most part. You know, some little dalliances here and there. But boy, in WWE, it is really, really starting to become a little bit harder to ignore it, no matter what side you're on, or even if you're a neutral observer like myself. So this, what happened, this past weekend? So I'll note this with, CM Punk. A lot of talk about CM Punk this week. I'm not going to regurgitate all the big talking points, but the big news, obviously, is he's going to Saudi Arabia. What, about 5 years or so after he poked fun at The Miz for going in only the way that CM Punk could, in the tweet, and was clearly against the Saudis and that whole scene at that point. It was very controversial, obviously, in that day with the journalist that was killed there, and just a much different, seemingly much different era that we're in now. I think that most people have accepted that WWE and Saudi Arabia have this partnership, and it's not going away, and that it is one that people are just going to have to live with, because again, it's not going away. They can make their own choices. It is now harder to avoid it if you're into the storylines, because now where they have worked they made these events in Saudi more in the lexicon, so to speak, in the part of the story in WWE versus just these one-off kind of weird shows where Shawn Michaels comes out of retirement, you know, like those type of things. They're in canon, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So CM Punk and is going to take on John Cena, and they're really going overtime and trying to weave in the fact that they want people to know that they know that CM Punk is coming off as a hypocrite. That's a word that they've used. And John Cena taunting him on SmackDown, their follow-up promo, and getting a little bit more involved. So they're definitely leaning into it, which is interesting and fun. But it is interesting because it calls into question how, one, I was not surprised. I don't think anyone was, that Punk is going over. He wants to be a WWE employee for life. He has said that he wants to run NXT one day, which I think it's admirable, but I don't think there's a chance that ever happens. Simply because there's Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and as long as those two are, as long as Trips is around, you know, I can't imagine that that Phil is going to slide in there and start running NXT unless it just doesn't seem that's going to happen. And he's right, CM Punk, Phil Brooks, right where he wants to be. He used to fight in UFC, had a couple fights there, not so successful, but he loves combat sports. I assume he still trains, has probably a good relationship still with the guys at Rufus Sport in Milwaukee. And TKO obviously owns UFC, so he is right in that wheelhouse. I don't know if Punk's still doing MMA commentary. I think he might be for CFFC, but it's a perfect situation. He gets paid a ton of money to be in WWE, doesn't have to wrestle all the time, but has the more than part-timer, less than full-timer schedule, I guess, but he is, a frequent presence. And is a stone's throw from UFC if he wants to go to a show, if he wants to be involved. I'm sure there's going to be opportunities in his next TV deal through TKO for him to get some TV time, perhaps as an analyst, but a guest or something like that. I think that's of note. So he's right where he wants to be. So he's not going to tell them no when it's time to go to Saudi Arabia. It's a different era, I think, for him. I think he can talk himself into it. I'm sure the money is good, and away we go. And then yesterday, being Saturday, Punk, is everyone saying, was he stand for all these things? There was pictures of Punk in Chicago at one of the No Kings demonstrations, protests and so on that happened around the country on Saturday. It didn't seem to be holding signs or that stuff. He could have been just out for a walk. I think he was probably just part of it, seeing what's going on, all that stuff. Who knows? But there was pictures of him there yesterday. Great. Good for him. He's allowed to do that. What was interesting is this comes in a week when WWE definitely leaned more into the Trump administration. Triple H and Stephanie on Thursday, I do believe, took a trip to visit. They met RFK, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So they went and met with him. It might have been on Friday. Then UFC President Dana White was set to appear during the military parade that happened on Saturday as well. I did not catch any of that. Linda McMahon, of course, is there as well. And so, the Steph and Triple H met about the upcoming President Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. So there you go. So kind of leaning to that. And then Cody Rhodes appeared. Cody and a couple other people appeared. Cody Rhodes, Tiff Stratton, and the Street Profits appeared on stage and sang happy birthday to the Army. This was during a Fort Bragg event earlier this week. Donald Trump had they did a speech at the event and all those things as well. So you have this, they are definitely leaning way more into this politics and wrestling. And I would bet it's even money that Donald Trump appears at a WWE show at some point by the end of the year. He goes to UFC events frequently, gets a hero's welcome. Would he get the same reception at a WWE event? Who knows? And I'm not here to speculate on that, but I mentioned the Punk thing because obviously, the No Kings is in direct opposition to all that. Do I think he's going to get any ramifications? No. I think it's interesting, but I don't think that he's going to face any ramifications because he's a big star. If this is a guy that's lower down the card or a girl, maybe, but it's very interesting now that politics is so entrenched in our lives. We're right here. We can't get away from it no matter how much we try. And I guess to an extent, it's been there in WWE for a while with all the different, Sergeant Slaughter character. And then you had the Hogan Slaughter feud and the Iron Sheik, Colonel Mustafa, and those name changes. And we had the Muhammad Hassan, was that the wrestler they just did the Dark Side of the Ring on? And so I guess, to an extent, politics has been involved, but it was always just kind of a wrestling politics type thing, playing up on stereotypes. This is much different, where you have stars appearing at events and you have your chief content officer appearing at the White House, which they've done before. The McMahons and Trumps are very, very tied together. and you had Ari Emanuel. Initially, he pulled out of the Saudi deal, separate Saudi deal with his own company years and years ago with Endeavor, and then they're right back in it, you know, and Nick Khan and Dana White. So it's very interesting times. And again, you can't get away from it even if you wanted to, but here we are. Here we are. So yeah, so that was the weekend in politics. I promise we won't do that every single weekend or anything along those lines. But it, yeah, it was overall a quiet weekend. The only really kind of news as of now, bad news for Priscilla Kelly, the former Gigi Dolin in NXT. She appeared in her first post WWE match this weekend. We're talking about free agency and kind of the differing things with some of these free agents and free agents to be in our next segment. But she suffered a patella displacement in her first match. She was taking on her fiance Zachary Wentz for Wrestling Revolver in Ohio, and the match got stopped early. Suffered a knee injury, so hopefully that's okay. She said on social, "My patella came out of place. It does that from time to time. It's an anatomy issue I've had my whole life. Always work through it. Not an injury, quote unquote. Just hurts. And I have to pop it back in place, and it can, you know, the recovery time can depend on the severity. But she says she still plans to make her bookings next weekend. So that's." That's good. So she is, looks like she is back for that kind of a tough spot for her, her first time back out and to get injured and so on. That's rough. Other news, Will Ospreay announced he's getting married to Alex Windsor. The couple got engaged this past weekend and he just simply said, she said yes, and showed off a picture of a ring. And so Alex Windsor, who was signed by AEW this week, is now going to be married to one of its top stars. How about that? So we'll hear more about that. She made her last appearance as an indie wrestler at a Pro Wrestling Eve show. And yeah, it looks like she's going to be full-time in AEW. I wonder if they are moving to the U.S. So that is that would be interesting there. Will Ospreay had a very interesting week, and of course, leading it all in. He took on Swerve Strickland, and it appears we are going to get Swerve and Ospreay against the Young Bucks at All In. And we'll talk about All In a little bit more, talk about the card from this past Wednesday, which was a long one, 4 hours. It was the same thing as I did the week before, made it through the first 3 hours-ish, and then it was time to face reality and go to bed because I had to be up for work, full-time work the next day. And yeah, that was something. That was something. Do you like these 4 hour shows? I don't. I would go with the consensus that a 2 hour show is much better. If you have to go long, 3 hours is kind of that max. But 4 hours just seems to be a lot. And again, it's really just a dynamite collision put together, and with Adam Cole and the Paragon stuck in the very unfortunate spot, usually right at the very end. Tough for them, as always. But yeah, we're going to get 2.5 hours coming up on Wednesday for Dynamite, Grand Slam Mexico, which is a fun card coming together for Wednesday. A lot of multi-man matches and more. So we'll talk about that a little bit more, talk about the week ahead and some leftover news. And I'll get a few more of your Father's Day memories and Father's Day, how your father connect you to pro wrestling. So we'll do that after we come back. Wrestling Observer Live, Father's Day edition, back in a few minutes. Wrestling Observer Live, back with you on Sunday. You can obviously listen to the show every single day. Yes, every single day. Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Majim Valley, Brian Alvarez, and various co-hosts like Lance Storm and Tom Lawler appearing during the week. I haven't appeared during the week. Can you believe that? Keep me off this show. Ratings are too high, I guess. I don't know. Excuse me. And then, obviously, Sunday's here at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. You can obviously hear replays on wherever you're listening to this now. If you're listening on WrestlingObserver.com, obviously, you can get the archives at any time for this year's show, Wrestling Observer Radio, Brian and Vinny, all the other podcasts on our great network. And if you're listening to us on Sports Byline, you can listen to the replay directly after, and various other methods as well. So certainly no shortage of places to hear and listen to Wrestling Observer Live, Wrestling Observer Radio, or all the great shows on our podcast network. Let's talk really quick. If you were sleeping, or if you missed it, you were out for the weekend, New Japan revealing the participants for the G1 Climax Tournament. We'll go over Dominion real quick. So spoilers ahead at this point, you know, if you haven't watched the show, you can just fast forward ahead or whatever. At this point, I'm going to guess you kind of know what's going on. So New Japan Dominion took place, and the first 16 participants for the 35th G1 tournament, which runs from July 19th through August 17th, were announced. They're going to have four qualifying matches that are going to take place in the next few weeks to determine the final two slots of each block. We had four participants that were revealed the other day via a poster in the New Japan store in Tokyo. And that was the two were primary, that Konosuke Takeshita, of course, the current never open weight champion, as well as the ace, Hiroshi Tanahashi, his final tournament he's going to be in this year. Of course, he's retiring in January 2026. This will be his final G1 tournament. He did not participate last year. He will be in this year. So let's look at the A block. Hiroki Goto, Bolton Oleg, or Oleg Bolton, depending on which where you side there. Yuji Irimura, Yotosuji, David Finley, Evil, Sanada, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and then two more qualifiers yet to come. In the B block, El Phantasmo. Shota Umino, Shingo Takagi, Zack Sabre Jr., one of my favorites to watch, Great Okan, Gabe Kidd, Ren Narita, Konosuke Takeshita, and then two more. And yeah, so this this year's tournament is shaping up, so if you thought we were going to get any break in pro wrestling, my friends, you got a lot more ahead, So the participants announced the brackets and, again, the other qualifiers. That's going to be taking place here over the next few weeks, so we'll be live and ready to go for New Japan. Of course, you can follow along with all the coverage here on WrestlingObserver.com. We had a couple new champions announced, made last night. We had nothing really major here. Hiroki Goto retained the IWGP world title. We had the tag team titles changing hands. Taichi and Tomohiro Ishii winning the titles, defeating Great Okan and Callum Newman. And we also had in the co-main event, Gabe Kidd defeating Yotosuji to win the IWGP Global Championship for the very first time, afterward calling out Hiroshi Tanahashi, who had earlier in the night defeated Yuji Uemura, and the two had a stare down, likely setting up a future match. We'll see where that goes. So yeah, New Japan's big summer awaits, and they had their big show last night, and a lot more to come. So follow along with all the news and action on the on this show and WrestlingObserver.live. Of course, WrestlingObserver.live. Wrestling Observer Live. We also had, let's also talk about this for a minute. So we had some, I mentioned Gigi Dolin earlier. Free agency caught my attention this week. Of course, R-Truth fully back in WWE. He will, on this Friday SmackDown, a rematch, Ron Killings, R-Truth, will take on John Cena. Truth Killings jump Cena on Friday. So we're setting up that again. Carlito officially became a free agent, so he's not coming back. So his deal is done. And we mentioned Valhalla last weekend. But so something that really caught my attention this week was Nixon Newell and her honesty. And you don't hear this a lot from wrestlers, and I love this. So Nixon Newell, former Tegan Nox again in WWE and NXT, did an interview last week saying that she's had a severe lack of booking since her release from WWE in November 2024. I think she's beginning to turn a corner. And then the other day, June 7th, had already said the social media she did, promo she did, had led to an increase in bookings. And she said, it's been slow. It's picking up a lot now. I'm happy to say I'm getting more busier. I like to be busy and so on. And I like her honesty. And it made me think of these things like you have all these talents that get released. And we've talked about this before. Wrestlers that get released from contracts, what do they do after that? How bad do they want it? Do they want to get out there? Or are they like, well, I'm going to wait for the big offer? Or are they like, I just don't really like this? And you notice a lot more WWE because obviously some people they release came through the performance center. And they came through and they were athletes in different sports, college sports. WWE is the only thing they've ever known. And then they get in there, and once they get out, they're like, I've never worked indies. What do I do? Is my expectation that AEW, another big promotion, going to pick me up? Do I want to do that? There's a perception issue. All those types of things, right? So now you have all these wrestlers that are going out in the scene, and they have to essentially compete with each other for work and spots and indie promotions and getting noticed and so on. Shotzi Blackheart did an interview with Errol Helwani, I believe it was this or last week. Yeah, last week. And Shotzi talked about, you know, she'd love to go back to WWE, but she'd want to be used. And she was asked by AEW. She said she'd love to go back to AEW. She wants to prove herself on the indies to get that spot. Nixon Newell, rather, saying, you know, she'd love to work there as well, but doesn't seem like there's much interest there. And you have other wrestlers, you know, Indy Hartwell, signing with TNA and doing her job there, doing her work. And you have other women. I mentioned Gigi Dolan, Priscilla Kelly is back out there. And there's other ones that from the WWE releases that are going to get their 90-day clauses coming up, and they're going to be out there as well. And it just kind of made me think how it is. It's a very competitive market. And one of the things that Newell brought up is she said she wasn't proactive enough in promoting herself after release. She also thinks WWE playing up her past knee injury issues made people see her as injury prone, and perhaps it made some promoters scared to take a chance on her. And she said she had also gotten a car accident and so on, and but seems to be okay. Cora Jade, Elena Black was quickly announced to be, you know, doing some dates with GCW. So it's there's so many different aspects of this that must make it so difficult, not just for women, but for men as well, where you have to, you know, do you sign with an agent or not? I think that seems to be more popular. I think Paragon is the agency that Mojo Rawley is a co-founder of. Bill Barons is a agent. There's other, you know, agents out there and so on. But essentially it's, what does the talent want to do, and are they willing to grind for it? Because AEW's roster is pretty packed. Is TNA, there's really, you know, TNA has signed some people, and I expect we may see one or two more as time goes along. They, you know, they really do well with these short-term contracts. Bring people in for 6 months, see how it goes, and then kind of figure it out. Short programs. Like they're bringing they brought the Inspiration back, of all teams, for the women's tag team division, but from both sides said, or at least one side said, it was a short-term deal, and we'll just kind of see how things go. But there's no other big three, the third promotion, to say we'll build around that. And that made me think, like, there's really, despite, and I've said this before, there's really no better time for a bigger, big independent number three promotion to get into the game. The problem is it's money, and it's resources, and it's interest, and how are you different? NWA is not going to be that at this point. They never seem to bring on any of these old or these recently released wrestlers. They kind of do their thing, you know, low budget, and just kind of appeal to a much different group. And they're kind of a feeder group for everyone else. MLW, bless them, are doing their thing, and they bring in names and they try, but they also leaning very heavily in the CMLL relationship, and it is they exist, but they don't have a national TV deal, and it seems that they are a higher end indie promotion in a sense, but they're just not at that level that it's going to take. And it's really going to be signing big free agents that's going to do that. Again, you need money. Cort Bauer getting the big settlement from WWE, but if they're happy, kind of do what they're doing, you know, go for it, go with God, as they say. TNA is obviously a good choice, but they have their partnership with WWE, and we already see how this goes. Reports coming out this week, kind of no big surprise. They're interested in both Joe Hendry and Mike Santana. We certainly know they're interested in Joe Hendry, and they have been for quite some time. Mike Santana, interesting that he's certainly a kind of finally coming into his own. He's healthy, getting some work, getting some rub, and I think he'll, as most people think, he'll be the guy to be Trick Williams for the TNA World Title, probably at the Slammiversary show coming up this summer. But they're essentially a part of the WWE developmental system at this point, and it's out they want to be. You know, if they are able to get their TV deal that they desperately want to get off of Access, even though they own it, and get somewhere it's going to be more homes, they'll take it. But does that change that relationship when it's up? They ever want to be a competitor, or they just want to be a secondary brand, a development group, WWE? What's better for them? I don't know. And it's a big week of AEW / Ring of Honor versus CMLL. They want to do this for a while. AEW's debut in Arena Mexico. And we have Mexico, of course, taking on MJF, which was finally agreed to, which should be interesting. See how it has any parallels to the Chris Jericho and Mystico match. Well, hopefully for the better. For those of you who remember seeing that match, and kind of a, not exactly not exactly a hit, put it that way, at the very end. But yeah, Grand Slam Mexico should be good. We have a very unique match. So this is what our rundown is right here. We have Zeusis defending the CMLL World Championship, CML Women's World Championship against Mercedes Moné. We assume we know how that's going to go, which if it does go the way we think it's going to go and Moné wins the title, why'd she lose the New Japan Women's Strong title, right? What was the purpose of that? The Death Riders and the Young Bucks taking on Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay, and the Ops, of course, Mojo, Powerhouse Ops, and Shibata. Kazuchika Okada taking on Mark Briscoe. Didn't know if we were going to see Okada on this card after the vicious attack on Kenny Omega, perhaps to take out both people. I am interested, first kind of seeing that Kenny Omega wasn't going to be on the show was kind of a bummer, but I'm wondering if he might be out for a measure of revenge against Okada. We'll see if that happens at this match. Adam Cole, Daniel Garcia, Brody King, Templario, Bandito, and Atlantis Jr. versus FTR, Kinosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander, and Hechicero. And we also have the 4 million peso four-way, Ricochet, Hologram, Leo Rush, and Masa Dorada. Of course, those are all the matches made as of Sunday. So we'll see what happens there, but it should be fun. It's 2.5 hours, so you're going to get more wrestling coming up, different environment. We'll see how they shoot it differently. And kind of that's the key. You don't want to have it appear to be every other AEW show, right? That you're there for a reason. And so, this should be a lot of fun. But yeah, another 2.5 hours and we'll have a Collision back in our lives a week this Saturday coming up and so on. And yeah, should be interesting times ahead. Of course, WWE, we are rolling towards the Night of Champions. You got tournaments, qualifiers, and heading to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, and in just a short amount of time. Again, we talked about CM Punk and John Cena earlier on the show. And yeah, it should be interesting afternoon as always. And it looks like we might get Gunther and Goldberg for the title. Can you imagine that? Sounds like Goldberg. The reason that Gunther beat Jey Uso, the report that Dave Meltzer had is that Triple H wanted Goldberg's final match to be for the title and competing for the title, which it looks to be July 12th, Saturday night's main event. But if that's the case, you're going to have him lose in his last match. Why does it have to be for the title? There's a lot of other questions. We'll get back to that and more coming after the break. Wrestling Observer Live. Coming back in a minute. All right, Wrestling Observer Live. Two more Father's Day memories real quick. Ari Burson said his dad had a friend that worked for MSG back in the 80s. He would go to WWF shows all the time. They cheer for the heels. His friend, a group of people were cheering Bobby Heenan. Anytime he walked around the side he was sitting on, one of the producers noticed this and thinks Heenan was told not to go to the side of the ring anymore, which led to this story. 2007 at an indie show in Morganville, New Jersey. First ever live show. Steve Corino was a heel champion. His dad was cheering him. Had two lackeys to wrestle in a tag match. First half of the show completely ignored him. Intermission, it came up to us and didn't know whether to play up to him or ignore him. My dad told the Heenan story to them and they both laughed. Now at the second half of the show at the main event, the camo Steve Corino, one of them looked directly at my dad and said, "All of you people suck except this guy right here." And they pointed at him. Corino won via cheating. Both he and my dad cheered. And that's how I knew that cheering for the heels was the right thing to do in wrestling. They both still keep up with AEW and WWE 20 years later, even though they live in different states. They still text during the shows live. Great story there. And finally, Ian Forsythe sent one over. My dad absolutely loved the Laps Fan podcast. He's a former fan of pro wrestling. He has still no idea why I watched this fake stuff. 4 years old, he got a VHS tape from his brother's friend, copy of SummerSlam 1988. His fandom was locked in there. His dad came out with the following reviews and insults and matches. "There should be blood everywhere," his dad says. "Why is he not bleeding? If someone hit you on the head like that for real, you'd know about it." You can see his intrigue was piqued from time to time. Notably, where Repo Man was on screen, and he also liked Mr. Perfect's towel spot. A fan of going in Scotland, wrestling's only here time to time. Age of 14, he took to my first show. Turned me one up Steve Austin's Last Force Company. Now I have my own daughter, and she hates wrestling. Ian Forsythe, thank you so much for that. And thank you all for listening on this Father's Day. I'm sure you have similar memories of your own. Why is he not bleeding? Yes, I've heard that one before as well. Fun show. A lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of things ahead. But happy Father's Day to all you. If you have a father in your life that got you into pro wrestling, send him a message today and thank him for doing that. Or like Ian's dad, maybe share some insults about the sport of kings. We'll be back here next Sunday with Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. See you next Sunday. And again, have a happy Father's Day and a great week.